What's up, Citizen Detectives? Yellow Jackets Season 2 premieres this weekend. Are you excited? Are you ready? We're going to be back with coverage of all new episodes starting this weekend. We're going to keep pace with the series, dissect, recap, theorize wildly and recklessly. It's going to be awesome. But we have an interview we've been sitting on for a while with costume designer Marie Schley. This was done a little bit after Season 1 wrapped, so no real spoilers for Season 2, but this is full of tons of insight, looking at the costumes, the Antler Queen, all how the iconic looks and styles of the series were created. This is a long interview. We go really in depth. I think you're going to enjoy it. I think you're going to dig it. We have one more bonus episode, one more bonus interview coming out this week, but then this weekend we are back with all new content, all new episodes. Can't wait to see you then. Take care and enjoy the interview. We have a very, very special guest on the show, costume designer Marie Schley, who worked on the pilot in the later half of the season. Marie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're so excited to talk to you about all the costume and the looks in the show.
I'm excited to talk about it, too. It was such a fun project to work on. So
that's awesome. So for Yellow Jackets fans not as versed in TV production, what does a costume designer do as it pertains to creating character looks and wardrobe choices, both large and small?
Okay, so I guess I'll just walk you through the process. So you read the script, you do sort of the practical element, which is you break it down by the amount of changes and what people need to be doing in each scene and change. And then, you know, you come up with inspiration boards and that's when you start having a dialogue with the creators and the directors and be like, this is kind of the vibe I was thinking. And I like this color for the scene. And in Yellow Jackets, I met with Karin Kusama at her house. And the first thing we started talking about was just the way she works is we just started talking about colors, and she had some amazing photography and the book of color combinations that she was showing me. One thing she kept showing me was this sort of like plastic pink raincoat in sort of mud. And so I was like, all right, that's the one thing I'm going to find a plastic pink raincoat and make sure I get it in there. Because I think it was the texture that she was really into for her scene. Then you just start making things and you figure out what you need to make and what you can buy. And it starts getting real fast. I would say a lot of it is organization. And then by the time you have some conversations with the actors, and then really everything I think is found in the fitting, you know, you having a dialogue with the actor and some things work, some things don't, something you thought was going to be amazing doesn't work. And then there might be something on the back of the rack that they're like, oh, what about this? Let's try this. And then that's the definitive item, you know, that kind of defines the character. And then they're shooting it, and that's its own production of precision and different moving pieces at all times. One thing that's fun about costumes is I think it's the only department that actually works with every other department.
Work
with sound, we work with the directors, we work with the producers, the actors, the production designer, and we touch every department. We touch their work at some point. So that's fun.
So what was your journey into the world of costumes and costume design?
It was, you know, I think one thing to remember about everybody's journey is it's never like a linear path. It's always winding. I was a English and anthropology major in college. I moved to Los Angeles on a whim, and I always liked clothes. So I got into just working for other costume designers, and then became a costumer. And then I went back to school for fashion, and then came back to costume design and kind of applied that, all those things I learned in school.
Oh, that's awesome.
There too.
And how did you get involved in Yellow Jackets? How were you first aware of the project?
I'm not exactly sure, but I think it's because I had met Karin Kusama, the director, and interviewed for other projects she was doing. We just hadn't had the chance to work together before. And I think my name was on a list, and Karin was like, oh, I know Marie.
And when you originally got the pilot script, I mean, were light bulbs just going off?
It was such a great script, and just I think just the element of this wilderness just caught, you know, my imagination immediately, and just figuring out what that scene was going to look like of them around that fire eating, so, eating another girl was really fun. It really appealed to my, I guess, my stunted adolescence, that we're still thinking in terms of like mean girls and hierarchy and then.
Yeah, it was so aesthetically pleasing, that scene, I have to say, considering the fact that you know what a horrific thing is happening, the way that the costume and the design and what the girls are wearing is actually, in my opinion, very aesthetically pleasing. I found that quite fashionable, thinking the fact that they're out in the wilderness. How did they get these coats? You know, when you first see the scene, you're like, oh my God, who knows how to sew there?
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, was saying to you before we got on the air, I mean, luckily we had enough time to figure it all out, because we had to kind of, you know, when you're making, they basically create their own society, their own little whatever it is out there, religion, whatever
yeah.
it turns out to be. And so many of those things are rooted in ideas and necessity. So we tried to, we were, you know, at that time we were guessing what was going to happen because we didn't really know. We had a few yeah. hints. But most of the furs are supposed to be, you know, rabbits and things that you could catch out there easily. And it's supposed to look, you know, all the masks are made from sweaters and pantyhose, stockings, things like that, that girls would have. And I always think that, you know, and so then we tried to sort of assign different people. What I kept mentioning is the hierarchy. So in my yeah. mind, one of the things I said in my pitch to the creators was, you know, maybe there's a hierarchy. So, you know, the rabbits are the lowest, then you've got a possum and a skunk, and then it goes up, you know, to something. And then you've got your antler queen, which is supposed to be more abstract than literal. It's sort of queenly.
And so without bearing the lead, you have won an Emmy for your work on Transparent. You worked on Friends, an impressive selection of TV and movie projects. How was Yellow Jackets different? You mentioned the prep time, but between the different time periods and being set in the 90s and present day, could you talk a little bit about how you had to approach this differently?
Well, for one thing, it's suspense, which is a totally different thing. I've done a lot of comedy, and I know Transparent was called a comedy, but it was a little bit of a dramedy. And this tonally has a little bit of all of that too. I mean, we talk about that with the creators. It's, you know, it's got funny moments, Yellow Jackets I'm speaking of, yeah. and it has horrifying moments, and then some sort of almost realism in there too, with some of these, you know, what it really means to be an adolescent and someone who suffered through a trauma. So I would say I think in general that all those different elements combined makes it different than mm-hmm. some of the stuff I've worked on before. And then also the way we had to approach it was like, I was to sort of in a functional way to break it down. I'm like, there's a fantasy portion, mm-hmm. which is this stuff in the wilderness. There's a 90s portion. There's a contemporary portion. And then there's a soccer show that's happening as well, which is its own, you know, it's its own thing, because you have soccer doubles and you have everyone's training to learn how to do soccer and shooting sports. I mean, sounds boring, but it's incredibly tedious and difficult.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get in the weeds with this a little bit. I have to say, impressed to the level of detail and the accuracy as someone who was around the same age in the mid-90s, what was it like developing a sports team look, given how relatively simple high school sports uniforms are, and developing that for both the Yellow Jackets and the team they beat at state, the Phantoms?
Well, luckily, you know, we did a fair amount of research. We went into yearbooks and things like that from the 90s. And I called my friends who played soccer in New Jersey in the 90s and asked them to send me their soccer photos. But the uniforms really have changed a fair amount. I mean, they were baggier. They had this collars, which they don't have anymore. And that was fun. And there is some strange vintage soccer stuff on eBay that you can get.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so originally the pilot script was set in 94. when it happened. It ended up being 96. That was right before the Umbro revolution, I think, of
right.
of soccer. And I do have to ask, because, you know, I didn't even notice this until my last rewatch, but you see the mascot a bit in the pilot, very briefly in the reunion. Was that something off the shelf? And does the mascot have a name?
It was totally off the shelf because we were working so fast. And I don't think it does have a name, but, you know, now that you bring it up, I'm going to have to.
We have to find a name for this mascot. We absolutely have to give him a name. I actually love the mascot. Is the scavenger hunt as fun as it sounds, right? Because I'm sitting here, I'm into fashion. I was a teenager in the 90s. But I assume that when you look at the pilot, is it fun to go out and search for these items? Like, what is that process like for you? Not only professionally, but do you get that? Since you come from a background of fashion, do you get that awesome sense of going to find these things and the thrill of finding exactly what you were looking for?
Yeah, I think that is it's a great way of describing it, because, you know, especially when you've lived through that era, you know, you're searching in thrift stores, you're digging through barrels of vintage clothes, you're at the costume houses, you pull out something and you think, oh my God, I forgot that I had this back in, you know, that kind of thing. And it's fun to, you know, and then you have to, in terms of character, you kind of have to figure, oh, this is the girl that would wear this.
Yeah,
this is the girl that would wear, you know, the rugby shirt, the Tommy Hilfiger rugby shirt.
Right. Now, working with a significantly younger crowd that might have not been there through this era, did any of them have a moment where you were dressing them that looked at you like, what are you thinking?
Well, it was really funny because we would ask everyone, one of the fun things I like to do is ask people what they want to listen to, what music they want to listen to in the fitting. And everyone's like, let's listen to 90s music. And and then you put it on and you'd be like, God, I mean, or, you know, if you just do a generic Spotify 90s list, it's not the greatest.
Yeah, it's like
not at all. They're really horrible. You have to make your own.
It's so much pedestrian stuff. It's not like the more interesting things. But, you know, I remember hearing actually in the mid 90s, I think it was on the Dazed and Confused Laserdisc commentary about how they raided every Goodwill in Texas for clothing. I have to ask, because the internet made it easier to source vintage pieces.
Yes. Yes and no. I mean, back in the day, vintage was not as popular as it now. It's such a regular part of everybody's lives. And just to kind of tie that in with your question, you said, I mean, all the actors were obsessed with the 90s when we were doing our fitting. They'd be like, oh my God, I love that. You know, they loved kind of seeing all this stuff. It has a different sort of nostalgic feeling for them, maybe for their, like, I don't know, their mom wore it. But yes, so eBay, all those places are great because you can Google, you know, or search for a brand name, you know, like Casual Corner or whatever. I mean,
right.
That was hot back then. And stuff will come up.
And do you and the team consider yourself an expert on the taxonomy of flannel now at this point?
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, flannel doesn't go out of style. We all are still wearing it, I guess.
Yeah, but it was so big in the mid-90s. So speaking of which, high school sports teams are this convergence of players from different groups, both social and economic status. How deep did you go in the research of each character in terms of what Lottie would wear versus Van versus Laura Lee in the mid-90s?
yeah, it's definitely a consideration for sure. And, you know, characters changed a little bit as we shot the series, but I mean we basically did a cross section. It's interesting, you know, and again, Lottie is a little bit more high fashion and more cutting edge than the others because she has the money and she's looking a little, her inspiration came more from Teen Vogue, whereas Natalie's is coming from, you know, different musical artists at the time. And, you know, I mean,
it's funny that you bring that up because there's a scene when they're doing their dance party, I guess, out in the woods, where I am actually looking forward to seeing what Lottie is going to wear because of her status and to pay homage to Laura Lee. She ends up wearing Laura Lee's dress. And I'm like, come on, girl, I wanted to see what you were going to bring to the table.
Were you surprised when you caught up on the episodes in between about Lottie's TJ Maxx revelation? And will we potentially see that pay off a little bit in perhaps some odd clothing she has in the future?
Wait a minute. I don't even remember that. Refresh my memory.
When they're doing the confessions and Laura Lee is saying she thinks she caused the plane crash because she called her piano teacher the C word. In episode two, Lottie says she steals TJ Maxx clothing and then returns them for store credit. And she has like an insane stash of TJ bucks.
Oh, that's hilarious. I do remember that now. I guess so. Well, you're making me think, how would I, you know, show that visually? I guess
I just think it's amazing in the 90s, the scams that kids were able to get away with.
I know, and I love that they refer that because shoplifting is such a teen girl thing. It's so, it's like a rite of passage, I think, for so many people.
And we see it throughout pop culture in movies, especially from girls that have the money, such as Lottie, are the girls that you see in movies that get into shoplifting and all that. So I thought it was funny that was her, you know, confession.
Totally. Well, it reminds me of like the whole Winona Ryder thing where she was.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so, okay, I'm writing that in my notes so that I make sure to add that to season two.
I love those little details and Easter eggs. But okay, so speaking of 90s media, were there any key images or concepts that you thought of and wanted to utilize that we can directly see in the show? Speaking of that vision board and your inspiration.
Well, okay, so you know, we definitely had one image I kept thinking about was, I mean, I love Reality Bites.
Yeah.
There, as far as movies goes, kids, what else do we have on our boards? We had, you know, I mean, we even had Blossom. Do you remember that show? We had, Babes in Toyland, Courtney Love. We had early Marilyn Manson for our goth kid. We had, it was just fun to go back and look at all those different things. I have to go, I have my binder here somewhere, but, and then we did have tons of real yearbook photos of kids. And, and then what else was an inspiration? Wait, what you asked me something else in that question. Let me see if I can.
90s media, like,
90s media. Right. And then, you know, Ashley and Bart are really into music. We had tons of sort of different, they had very specific ideas of what bands they wanted on what character in terms of the graphic t-shirts and, and Kurt Cobain and his sweaters. I mean, we all lived through this. So I'm going to be honest, there's still stuff in my closet from the 90s and my coworkers' closets that we used. I mean, Natalie's boots, the first ones of the pilot, I literally ripped off of Katie, who was my key costumer, and we put them on her because she was kind of punk in the 90s. She's in the 90s.
I've never gotten rid of a band t-shirt. I've still got, I think, everything that I've, you know, bought. And probably half my wardrobe is stuff I probably bought at Anchor Blue in like 99. And I still think it's relevant and fashionable today, you know, and frosted tips are going to make a comeback on men.
Men wore such this, you know, it's just like little details, like silver jewelry was much, much more popular in the 90s than gold at that time. And guys wore jewelry and rings.
It was every headshot.
Way, a slightly different way. It's interesting because you're seeing these things coming. The actors are coming in with tattoos and piercing, but I'm like, oh, but we didn't have that piercing. It was like, you know, the eyebrow.
It was all that crappy stainless steel stuff you would get at the head shop where you went to get your tobacco pipe.
Exactly.
Yeah. And was there anything subconscious you noticed after the fact? I'm sure you've seen the meme that 96 Misty and Doom coming in her overalls looks a lot like Chucky from Child's Play in terms of how he's dressed.
No, but I love that. I mean, we just tried to, you know, I think Misty's costumes always were kind of a little humorous to us. We've always been trying to make them funny. Some of the, the overalls and we thought the sort of, we had some really bad overall shorts for her with with like floral patches on them or something. I can't remember. But so in retrospect, no, I don't know, but I do like when people see these comparisons.
Do any of the 90s characters reflect your own fashion sense back then? Is there one of the girls that you feel if you were back in the 90s, you probably dress like her?
Yeah, probably Shauna. Yeah. I like the, you know, I try to give her sort of the, you know, one of the things I was talking about before, I mean, the 90s, it wasn't as, I mean, it was grittier and that was like part of the look. And, you know, during that Riot Girl and girl power thing, it was supposed to be a little bit unpolished. And that was like the rawness and the sort of like the middle finger to everybody, you know, the power of that. And I think I miss that. I do. I think that was kind of a fun.
I love that. I was talking to my friend who just got into it and she's now messaging me every day about the show because she loves it so much. And she said, oh, you remind me so much of Jackie. And I'm like, I am nothing like Jackie. And she's like, okay, but you guys dressed the same way back then. And I'm like, okay, fashion sense, I get it. So it's funny how people like, you know, it depends on what era they grew up with. This is a childhood friend of mine. So she knew how I dressed back
then.
Right, exactly. I was like, personality wise, I don't think me and Jackie are anything alike. Once she let me know it was because of the wardrobe, I was like, okay, I see it now.
Right. Yeah, no, I think a little Jackie and me too. I think, you know, the East Coast, I'm from New Jersey and I moved to LA in 94. And I just was amazed. The East Coast is just a little bit more conservative, a little more traditional. You know, LA was so trendy. Everybody wore the trend on the street. There wasn't as much diversity of looks as there was on the, you know, on the East Coast.
And I guess this is a question in terms of time or obsessive detail when creating a look, but do you develop an internal headcanon? Like you mentioned about the hierarchy with the Antler Queen dinner party. Do you find yourself developing an internal headcanon or story about some clothing items? For instance, I think of the poncho Shauna was wearing in Doom Coming. I think every teenager in the mid 90s owned one of those, but nobody bought one. It was handed down and it was never washed. I mean, do you think sometimes about the journey?
Absolutely. I mean, especially when it comes to the stuff in the wilderness or, you know, the like we we're moving clothes around between the actors so that, you know, as there's, we'll be doing more of that, as they're sharing, we have sweaters, you know, that we've made into masks and you'll see more of the, you know, the evolution of them into a mask. I mean, everything, you have to have a little story behind every piece of clothing because that's what gives it the character and the richness. I'm trying to think of like a good example. Well, like for instance, the pink raincoat, to go back to that.
Yeah.
That Karim wanted. We had to create a story about why they would have this pink raincoat in our head to justify having it in there, you know? So we put it on the, what we were calling the butcher character who slits and bleeds out the girl because we're like, oh, she doesn't want to get blood spattered all over her. So she's wearing a raincoat. So that would be the kind of backstory we would have for something.
That's cool. Or though.
Jackie's necklace.
Yeah.
You know, so that was always in the script, but what would that be? And in my mind, that is the Tiffany heart necklace you got for your 16th birthday from your parents.
Yes.
I still have mine.
Exactly. So that's why I chose that. And then they were like, oh, okay, we get that.
And speaking of the necklace, was that the actual Elsa Peretti design, or did you have to, for legal reasons, come up with something similar on the necklace?
I'm going to plead the fifth on this one for legal reasons.
I understand. It was funny. My wife.
We have to have a lot of them.
Yes, no, I understand. My wife popped for that when watching it. She was like, I recognize that necklace. So if it's an homage, definitely translated. So let's talk about you mentioned the Butcher character, recognizing that some of these names are only canon to the costume department. So yes. I know yes. fans came up with the Antler Queen. Are there any? I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I was going to finish your sentence, but you should ask your question.
Yeah, just say, what are the other code names that were used for the different characters?
Well, I've thought about telling people the code names. I hope I'm not giving anything away, but you know, the truth is I don't really know what's going to happen. We had Bunny, Possum, Squirrel. I mean, we had Bunny, Possum, we had Skunk. And then we had the Butcher. Then we had one we called the Fighter. I don't know why, because we put all these like hoop earrings and she looked really tough and butch in it. So we called her the Fighter. We had the Butcher. We had Misty, mm-hmm. who we knew was Misty. And then at the time we called the Antler Queen the Oracle. But
I was hoping that the Fighter was the girl that got butchered.
Oh, right. No.
Because she did try to put on a fight.
Oh, and then the Hunter, the one that's, you know, who shows up at the very first. We called her the Hunter.
So what was the process like in designing at the time the Oracle, the Antler Queen? I mean, obviously that's such a showcase, iconic, instantly iconic character that I think really captured the imagination of the audience.
You know, it was really, well, one thing is, the way we ended up with the antlers is we did a lot of research, to different sort of ritualistic costumes. And one thing that happens is we wanted the human figure to be kind of distorted. So we wanted to give it height. And so you weren't really seeing something that was, identifiably a human. It was supposed to be something a little bit distorted with the antlers. And then in the first meeting I had with Karim, we talked about Misty's mask, and it was, I'd found a picture of a mask that was made of fur, and Karin really liked that because she said, oh, we can have Misty lift it over her head like a veil. And that's such a distinctive, like iconic feminine thing as a veil. And so we kind of went with that too, with the Oracle as well. We put, we draped a crocheted 90s dress over the antlers. And then we wanted the Oracle to stand out, so we chose to use a white white skins on her, as different from the fur rabbits of the other guys. And then I kept thinking, what's gonna be, what is the head of, what's the top of this pyramid? What's the top of this pyramid? We couldn't figure it out for the longest time. And then I'm like, oh, we'll put human hair on the Oracle to give her the highest status. And then how we were going to do that, we just kind of made it look, I was like, it'd be really cool to make it look like an ermine jacket or some kind of queenly robe. So that's kind of came through all these different layers of, and then came together.
It looked absolutely incredible.
Oh, thanks. And then we put some jewelry on it too, because
I love that. The pearls, like there's like pearls on it. I absolutely, yeah. I pop for that, and you completely change a lot of Christmas for people, because now when we put the little antlers that they make us put on for Christmas, I put mine on this year and I was like, I'm the queen.
Exactly. You can put some earrings on those. I mean, I just figured if they were in a bag somewhere, why wouldn't you put it on there? And to repurposing them, like when I was talking about the person we were calling the Fighter, we use like gold door knocker earrings as, we pierced it through the furs and stuff to kind of make it look like piercing, so it kind of looked tough.
I have to ask, because we're on the topic of the Oracle and the Antler Queen, the hair throughout the dress or the gown that she's wearing, because the length of the hair became such a theory online. We were all looking at the length of this girl's hair to see who had the longest hair that could go through the dress. I don't know if you're able to share this info or not, but is that her hair or did you guys add hair to it?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that, because since it hadn't been written when we designed this, we didn't know it was going. Everyone was like, well, I'm a little bit worried that it looks like, you know, we're talking about it with our creators, that it's going to look like too many girls, or we couldn't have like, you know, one of the things you couldn't show, one of the reasons the designs ended up the way they were is because we couldn't show anybody's face, skin color, whatever, because we don't know who's ultimately going to be in that pack of girls. And so we decided on one, we would just do one hair color. And then I was like, well, it doesn't, I mean, it could be a lot of things. I mean, and I'm going to throw it out there. I don't know the answer. It could be Lottie's hair. It could be people that have died. It could be the hair that's someone on Reddit or whatever, Twitter suggested that they had woven their own hair through the gown, which in the end, maybe we take that idea and run with that. I don't know. We'll have to see. That's what's kind of fun about it. Like, it's not written. It's like,
it was so good. Every episode, I kept looking at everybody's hair length just to see if it was growing long enough, you know? But I was really basing my own theories on their hairs because of the control of the hair throughout the gown.
See, and I always thought trophies, that it was essentially, displaying previous conquests. But that's really, really interesting. And but no, I think it makes sense though. And I love the way that you just kept fans guessing and guessing and guessing. And then I think it was Karen or someone in an interview that dropped like, oh yeah, by the way, those were all stunt doubles. Don't think, with the exception of Misty, that there was anyone there.
Mm-hmm, you know? That's true. And I think it's kind of fun. Like, we definitely, one thing I'm thinking, it's like when you're working, when you're creating within parameters. So we have that, like I keep calling it a goalpost of that feast, and they're gonna work their genius and figure out all sorts of new interesting things that no one's come up with to explain what happened there. I mean, we left enough room and enough, it's abstract enough that the writers can figure out different things to happen to get there, you know.
Well, and I know you've talked about this in other interviews, but talk a little bit about the pink Converse and the sort of purposeful game of hot potato that was played with that on different characters.
Well, the pink Converse came because as we were kind of developing these characters, Showtime, the creators, everyone's like, well, what makes this show different from this wilderness story, the aesthetic of this group different from other TV shows or whatever? And so I was like, well, when the shoes come to the edge of the pit, let's make them pink Converse. And then that kind of looks so distinctive next to the raw fur of the cape. And then, of course, once you put something that's so distinctive in that moment, you can't assign the pink Converse to one person, or everyone's going to think that that's the, it has to keep moving around.
Yeah. So after the pilot, you took a break from the series and returned to work on the last three episodes of the series. What was that crash course catch up like for you of the in-between episodes to then come back for the final three?
Well, I think it was pretty seamless actually, because I had created all the looks for the characters and I knew exactly why we had done certain things. The logistical thing is I couldn't go to Canada to do the series at the beginning because there was a 2-week quarantine.
That's right.
So, you know, I have a family, so I would never be able to see them. But by the time the end happened, the quarantine was taken away, so I could come back and forth if I needed to. Yeah, it was pretty seamless. I mean, you know, right when I came was when we started getting into sort of the breakdown of people's, you know, people's mental breakdown in the wilderness. Yeah. I knew what we could take from where we were going to kind of give us foreshadowing to that.
No, and it's funny you mentioned that. I didn't even thought of the quarantine. To me, it almost made sense when you look at the series to see the influence of the work you did in the pilot and then see that, I mean, I feel like the real visual action when it comes to costuming does occur in those final three episodes, which isn't to discredit the work that was done in between. But I think we, you know, you teased masterfully with the looks you created in the pilot, and we started getting there in those final three, and especially in Doomcoming. So I have to ask, because look, I've been to like three terrible Wiccan weddings, and Doomcoming looked like the best Wiccan wedding ever. How was it creating those looks for their forest formal that they had?
So much fun. I mean, I'm not someone who loves a perfection. I like things to be a little bit wabi-sabi, you know, a little bit of imperfection. So it's fun to be out in the wilderness, and everyone's like, well, are we going to give them their, you know, formal shoes? And I'm like, hell no, they're going to wear their sneakers and their Timberlands running through the woods, you know, with their dresses, because it was really fun. I mean, we made those gorgeous garlands. Mm-hmm. I had such an incredible team in Canada who artists. And for that, I kind of, we used different Victorian, I don't know if you guys have thought, there were these Victorian hair garlands that people used to mm-hmm. make for, and I was like, I want it to be like dead flowers and kind of a little bit, you know, reminiscent of those mourning garlands that people would make out of their loved one's hair. And then even though we were using stuff in the woods, we had to figure out what looked like it would come from that that ecological system. Like where in the heck in Canada is this? Everyone's saying it's way, way up in Ontario or something. And then the masks was also something really interesting, because I wanted Van to look like a cowboy or a pirate, something sexy and cool and rock starry. And so, but not Phantom of the Opera. That was a terror. I was really scared that it was gonna end up looking like a Phantom of the Opera mask. But so we kind of, and also it all had to be stuff that the girls could make, but sort of the best version of what they could make.
I love the mask in that episode. I love the moment, what it signified. And, you know, when Van was able to come to Doomcoming wearing the mask, and she felt so much better and so confident, even though we all know she was beautiful without the mask.
Yeah.
But I did think the mask has such a significant. I never thought Phantom of the Opera, so you accomplished your mission.
Thank you. It was so fun. And I loved being able to put different, I wove in some feathers and an earring and stuff like that would kind of harken to
it. I automatically thought pirate-ish, you know, with the things that were in it. I personally thought of a pirate, but I'm Puerto Rican, I'm from an island, so a lot of things remind me of pirate.
And her original bandaged look was cool as like a real just sort of low-tech survival version of him. She looks incredibly badass, but yeah, it looked very elegant. I mean, the masks were so well done, and I mean, it seemed like, you know, that night was the payoff of the best summer camp ever. So
or the worst.
Yeah, well, it went from the best to the worst, right? So having worked on the Antler Queen at the time, the Oracle, the more elaborate costume in the pilot, what was your approach to stripping that down and creating the 1.0 version of that in Doomcoming when Lottie dons the headdress for the first time?
So as it was written in the script, the headdress was kind of like a centerpiece or some kind of altery decorative piece that they make, and it just so happens that kind of Lottie instinctively just decides to put it on her head, you know. So it had to be something that looked like it would be in my mind, it's like it's a bouquet, you know, something you put on an altar or something like that. And that was an interesting process because we had to make it different than the way we made the Oracle.
Yeah.
In that, you know, bones are really, really heavy. Actors can't put the real things on their heads. So we had to make it out of fiberglass, I think. And then,
oh, wow.
It was a interesting process. Plus everybody's vegetarian or vegan on the show. We have to keep a list of who
that's right.
wear what fabrics.
I have to admit, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna have to, I'm reaching for a connection because I love payoffs and foreshadowing. And if you look in the pilot, when they're saying nice things to each other, you know, Van's complimented on her smile. Of course, what ends up happening to her, Laurelie on her faith. Look at how that turns out. So I was just like, find me a pilgrim hat that looks even vaguely like what Lottie's wearing. And then it looks like the most amazing foreshadowing with what Natalie says when she's on acid, when she says, I like your pilgrim.
Right, hat. Right. Oh, yeah. Well, I always saw. Yeah, we'll have to see. Okay. In my notes again, putting it in my notes.
Pilgrim hat. Yeah, but no, I love that. I think I like the original. I think I like the Doom Coming version of the Antler Queen look better than the finished one, just because it does look kind of like you said. It's so impromptu, but it just works, you know.
Yeah, I remember the shock value that it brought when she put that on. You're just gasping, like, "Oh my god, she is it!"
Well, and also, the dress we chose for Lottie to wear is supposed to be white and look kind of like that foreshadow that white cape later. And then Lottie also, I picked a lavender dress for her when she and Van and Misty go at the end of the episode 10 to with the heart purposely to link her to the abduction later where all these people are wearing lavender.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I want to talk about present day. I feel like in all the interviews that I've heard that you do and I've read, everyone wants to talk about the 90s, but the present day stuff.
I've been waiting to get to the finale because I need to ask. One of my favorite scenes in the entire season is them entering their high school reunion in their outfits, looking so fabulous. My favorite being Thaisa in the pantsuit almost, because she looked like a girl boss, and that's exactly who she always been as a character. So I'm glad Glenn finally brought it up, because I was like, I need to talk about that specific scene, how the looks look perfect on each one of them. And I also wanted to talk about the yellow dress that Jeff had picked out for Shauna, because Shauna would have never wore that. Who's responsible for that?
Yeah. Well, a Thaisa looks amazing. That's like a Chanel top that was bought by Carolyn, who did the middle episodes, and it looks so perfect. I love that she's supposed to look like a girl boss in that episode. And we just had fun. I mean, I helped Juliet and I designed her reunion dress together, because she had a very specific idea of what she wanted. And I know that Juliet had helped brainstorm that shot coming in, all of them.
Amazing. She looks so rock. Yeah, like rock star sexy was her look. That's what I would say. You know, when, like I said, Thaisa was girl boss. When I looked at Juliet characters, Natalie, I was like, okay, that's rock star sexy. Like, she doesn't give a crap like what the dress code is. You're gonna show up wearing whatever she wants.
Yes, and Shauna's dress is so sweet. I know that storyline was so important to Melanie, where they have this, it's the symbol of their sort of reconciliation, her and Jeff's reconciliation. It's really sweet.
It's
the show is shot so quickly that, you know, everyone's adjusting. Sometimes things just happen.
How was it picking Misty outfit for the reunion, given the fact that she was very pregnant at this time, right?
Right. Well, we had talked about, you know, what we need to obscure her pregnancy. Christina was busy. Christina has an incredible fashion sense. And so we were going to make a dress for her that was kind of purpley, because that's Misty's colors. And Christina always says, I like her in purples because it's sort of like the color of a bruise. Oh. And, but she was going back and forth to LA. So she texted me. She's like, okay, I'm going to wear a black dress and a blazer. And so it worked. It was basically, that costume was really fortunate that it worked out, because it was like her character, but also hid. Was really about hiding her pregnancy at that point.
No, it worked very well. And how was it collaborating with Julia Lewis? Because in addition to her reunion outfit, didn't she also have a hand in picking some of the band t-shirts and the looks for present day Natalie?
Yes, she did. And she wears a friend of hers band in 109 when she breaks the glass to the vending machine. And she said, I just think this is the kind of band, the contemporary punk. And I'm really great friends with this this artist. So let's use that. And she's really thinks everything through and brings so much to her character and her costumes and everything. I mean, she thinks about like the movement of a costume in a scene. She really wanted to wear something that had some kind of flow to it when she trashes her hotel room, because she knew she was going to be all over that hotel room and she wanted to have it. So she's wearing, I think, some kind of chiffon robey thing.
I don't know if it's as obvious to the viewer, but perhaps you could speak to links between the wardrobes of the 96 versions versus present day. I feel like in Shauna, perhaps because it speaks to her arrested development and some of the lingering issues she has, her fashion sense seems the most similar, but are there any other links that people can really notice versus what the present day characters are wearing versus their 96 counterparts?
Well, I think Natalie also has links in the fact that she still is eclectic. She still has that punk thing going. She wears a lot of animal skins. Uh-huh. But she also, her character, she still wears a motorcycle jacket. I mean, that was one of the things that we were linking them past and present. Like, but she is a hustler of some kind. She's sort of a grifter. So she has some money sometimes. And so, you know, her motorcycle jacket is a YSL version of the vintage one that she's wearing. I mean, not literally. I don't think that jacket is YSL, but it's supposed to be kind of a sophisticated, expensive version. And Thaisa, I think, is the one that has changed the most. She's more tomboy in the backlashes, and she has a very... And I've been thinking a lot about that and maybe how that will evolve in season two, too.
Especially with her becoming the senator, right? Such a public figure. And, you know,
she wears very high end clothes. She has a lot of money. And I think that is important to the storyline.
She is my favorite character present day. And I think her fashion sense is probably 75% of the reason why.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she has great clothes. She has that fantastic I mean, I think the trench coat for her was her iconic piece. It's Tom Ford.
Oh, 1,000%.
It's such a girl boss thing. So she looks fantastic in it. It's fun.
And I don't know if you were... Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead.
Oh, so I don't know if you worked on this directly, but for me, someone who is becoming one of my favorite characters is Allie at the reunion. And I'm curious if there was any thought into her wardrobe of how, you know, she wanted to be respectful of the shared trauma, but still wear something to draw enough attention to herself at the reunion.
Allie is so funny because in the pilot, we had so much fun, you know, with her and her house. I don't know if she's drinking wine when she's being interviewed in the pilot out of this like painted wine glass. It's just a little bit Jersey, a little bit Jersey tacky, over the top, a little Carmela Soprano in my mind. contemporary.
Did Tanya shoot on the original pilot? I'd assume she was cast for 10 and then they shot that scene to insert into...
No, she was in the original pilot.
Really? That is... Wow. Talk about foreshadowing of payoff, back to the original production versus, I mean, because the gap between the pilot and episode 10 being shot was almost like 20 months or something like that.
Yeah, it was 2 years.
Wow. That is awesome. Yeah. Tanya is fantastic. I think she's going to be a huge star, and I think this was, hopefully the role that catapults her to more stuff, but,
it's fun. I love her voice. It's perfect.
She's so good. So we were introduced to the followers of Lottie Matthews in episode 10. What was the inspiration and process like for creating those outfits?
That was, written in the script. They were supposed to be a lavender color, and it's supposed to be based on that I mean, they have a couple of inspirations behind that, but it's, there is a documentary, I think it's called Wild, Wild Country. Mm-hmm. And it's about a cult that was in Oregon during the 70s and 80s. So they all wear a particular color. A lot of cults do. That's sort of a stereotype of a cult. So that's kind of what it was. And it's not a uniform. It's a uniform color. So we kind of, people are just grabbing different pieces of clothing and putting them together to create their cult look.
What about the jewelry piece? Like they wear the jewelry piece with the script that we see. How do you guys make it? And when are you going to start selling it? Because I want one.
I know, right? it's the symbol that we see on the trees, right? And I don't know what the significance of that is yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Bart did the final design on that, I believe.
Nice.
Yeah, I was reading that. But no, after, it's funny you mentioned that with uniform, because I have to say I was going back to the pilot and looking at what everyone was wearing in Natalie's rehab facility and trying to, I like the idea of foreshadowing. Part of me is like, I want them to have been telling us all along this is where it was going.
Oh.
Yeah. But I love that. And it's been interesting to hear Ashley and Bart talk about watching like The Vow and some of the other research that they did into cults. So no, I think perfect amount of tease there, and I'm sure that'll be paid off more next season. But speaking of which, between the cult, the hunter, present day Lottie Matthews, the evolution of the tribes, what costume challenges are you most excited about for season two?
Well, I'm really excited to start, you know, visually showing the story of where they start at Doom Coming to where they get to. So hopefully there'll be an interesting breakdown of costumes as that goes on. And as we know more about where and who and what, I think there'll be more ideas that are, I mean, all of it. I love the modern day. I don't know where it's going. I have no idea. So I'm excited. Hopefully it'll all come together.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
So are there any 90s brands or looks on your personal wish list that did not make the cut in season one?
No.
Oh, that's fine.
No, I'm just trying to think. Answer. I'm like, I guess we could have done, I mean, I feel like we got it. There was a lot of, there's the Ralph Lauren of the 90s, the Tommy Hilfiger kind of thing, the floral dress trend with the Doc Martens. I think we got it. I mean, but you know, who knows? There's always more. I'm sorry. That's such a boring answer.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, and I know that's the key, right? It's about sort of balancing, you know, what can be talked about versus what can't. And it's amazing. I think, I mean, you were like one of the original citizen detectives in getting to sort of binge this series from the pilot to coming back on it. So I think that a lot of time fans sort of ascribe their own ideas to things, whereas for everyone working on it, it's just different pieces in the machine that gives us the finished product. Then fans can create like this entire backstory with it, which means it's working, right?
Yeah. I mean, I also think that stuff gets folded in. I mean, it's interesting because I think that's the way the creative process with write. I mean, I'm not a writer, but I know that like things that they put in the pilot, they may not have realized that they were laying ground for a storyline later. They'll go back and say, oh, you remember that blah, blah, blah in the pilot? That could be, you know, expanded on into this storyline. So when the audience is finding those things, I think that is part of like the creative process of writing a show like this too.
Right. Right.
So I just have a few more non-Yellow Jackets questions before we finish. But Issa, do you have anything else Yellow Jackets related before we take this home?
No, nothing Yellow Jackets related. I just think it was fabulous and very aesthetically pleasing. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you guys for being interested.
No, of course. Well, I have to ask is more general question because you know this stuff. I'm obsessed with wrinkle-free looks when dressing up. What techniques and tools does the costume department use on set to keep everything looking so wrinkle-free? Because I own a steam wand, a steam iron, a steam closet, and I swear to God, wrinkles are the bane of my existence.
Well, those things, I mean, you got to spritz it before you iron it. And then wrinkle-free, you know, it's, there's always a person on set maintaining that stuff. So maybe you just need a personal person behind you in the shadows is constantly, you know, foofing you and lit rolling you.
Well, especially in this 4K era, right? It seems like probably between every take, we've got to freshen stuff up because the cameras are going to pick it up. And are there any other costume designer insider tips that people can apply to their own personal style?
Well, I think people have said this before, but I always think, you know, get things tailored. I have so many friends who are like, I can't find anything. It doesn't fit me. And I'm like, we tailor everything on a show. We do not pick something off a rack and put it on an actor and it looks perfect. We tailor it. So go to your dry cleaner and get them to take up, hem your pants and to take in the waist and make it fit for you. That's a major part of having something look good on your frame because everybody's got different proportions. And I would also say that, you know your body best. So always accentuate what you think is your best asset.
There you go. There you have it. What else are you working on right now?
Well, I think I'm about to start a movie with Karin Kusama. So that'll be exciting. A version of Dracula.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, that'll be fun. So we'll see. Of course, that's total. We're totally in the beginning of that. So who knows? Next time we talk, I could not have.
Yeah. Yellow Jacket season two, Showtime is saying this year. So we've got 10 months left. Let's see. Yeah,
get ready.
We'll see how it comes together. Well, Marie Schley, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been awesome. Great learning about the development of this. Where can people find you on the internet? I know you're on Instagram. That's how we contacted.
I'm mostly on Instagram at Schley Style. And that's my social media.
And
MarieSchley.com, which I haven't updated in years. So
And your Instagram has had an amazing trove of behind the scenes photos. I think the fans found it early on, and that's where a lot of the guessing was happening, looking at the set production.
Oh, right. I still have more. I'm going to be very parceling them out little by little over the year. So
yeah, we got 10 months
to go. Turn notifications on.
Yeah, I'm going to
turn notifications on for every time you pose. Exactly. I'm a big fan of your jacket, Marie, by the way. I love your jacket.
Thank you. This is an ode to Natalie and her first. So I'll put some more. I have some fun stuff up there.
Very cool. Well, Marie, thank you so much. And thank you everyone for listening. We will catch you back here next time on Yellow Jackets Buzz. Take care.